Good morning. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy to have you along with us today as we switch gears and we go to the segment we're going to call Ask the Pharmacist. Our guest is Sean Gerke, who's a community pharmacy residency director, senior clinical pharmacist, the pharmacy manager, and a clinical instructor, UW Health Pharmacy Services at the Hilldale Shopping Center in Madison. And Sean, pleasure to see you.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Your first radio show.
First radio show, yes. So we'll see how this goes.
And one of the reasons that you're here is that October is American Pharmacist Month, the observance of time to recognize the contributions to healthcare by pharmacists in all settings from around the country. With healthcare reform on the table, have pharmacists taken any formal positions about any legislation in Congress?
Well, and as hopefully people know, or a lot of people know, pharmacy is very highly regulated profession. A lot of legal issues that come up regarding pharmacy. I think the main thing is that we as a pharmacy profession feel like this is a tremendous opportunity even to relook at pharmacy and what the model is and how we can shift the attention towards the services that we provide to people. And more of the value of how we work with patients. We help them utilize their medications to the best of their ability, help them with financial issues, help them with taking their medications and knowing how to take their medications appropriately. So our focus now, I think, and my focus, what I think is important, is making sure that as we're going through this healthcare reform, that the legislature is taking that into consideration, utilizing that so that we're shifting more of the attention of pharmacists on what we can do when working specifically with patients and their specific medications.
Mm-hmm. Sean Gerke is our guest. And do you think that the image of pharmacists as simply dispensers of medication is accurate, or do you see a larger picture than that?
Well, in this segues nicely into that is that that's part of the healthcare reform. And right now, the way that a pharmacist gets reimbursed is based on the product, the individual prescription. And each time that a prescription is filled, then there's a certain reimbursement for that, which is the way it's been for years and years and years. And I think that's why specifically they look at that as a dispensing role.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, I guess you need to look at what you mean by a dispensing role. Do you mean that's filling the prescription? Do you mean that's actually handing the prescription to the patient? Because it is important that there is a role that we're, and in the state of Wisconsin, it's a law that the pharmacist has to actually physically hand the prescription to the patient.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is that opens up that line of communication. It opens up that interaction, consultation with the patient so that there's communication there to make sure that the patient has the opportunity to express concerns they might have or questions they might have, and that opens that line of dialogue. So with the healthcare reform, we're hoping that we can, you know, I don't think we can necessarily ignore that or get rid of the way that that works, but also to understand that it's important to have reimbursement or to link reimbursement to some sort to the actual service that's being provided, the consultation, the looking at medications, sitting down with patients, reviewing those things, and making sure that everything is all encompassed into one picture.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Sean Gerke, who's the manager of the UW Health Pharmacy Services at the Hilldale Shopping Center in Madison. How long have you held that position?
I've been there since 2002. That particular store opened in October of 2002.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that make it now here? We're
somewhere
going on seven years. So.
And how long have you been a pharmacist?
I've been a pharmacist 8 years. So I graduated from the University of Wisconsin mm-hmm. here in Madison.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did a one-year residency program. It was a community residency that focused on some of the things we're talking about, trying to develop more patient care services, one-on-one interactions with patients, doing screening services, a more comprehensive utilization of that time. And then I was hired in this position at Hilldale to develop and provide more of those services through UW pharmacies.
Mm-hmm. Now, I also see that you're a clinical instructor, so you're teaching pharmacy students?
Yes, I am. I have, the one thing I have is I have students that do, in the fourth year of pharmacy school, it's all on practical instruction. So I have students that rotate my pharmacy site. They're there 40 hours a week, and we work kind of hand in hand doing some of these services and teaching them things that some of those, it's just helping enhance what they've learned at school, and other things are teaching them new things, some of the things they might not get the practical experience with when they're in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What is the most important part of the curriculum for someone who's interested in pharmacy? Obviously, counting pills is going to be one of them, but it's mm-hmm. got to be more than that, I would imagine.
Well, and counting pills, that's not even talked about in pharmacy school, mainly because there, we have technical staff that learn that and do that part of the role.
Mm-hmm.
And so pharmacy school is focused more on really getting a good fundamental knowledge of the medications, getting those basics down. Obviously, the world of pharmacy is, I think people know, changes on a daily basis, and there's new medications coming out, or there's changes to medications and what was originally studied or thought about. So it's making sure the fundamentals are there. And it's also developing communication skills, understanding how to communicate with patients and make sure that you have a tools and a systematic approach for communicating medication-related issues to patients. Those are some of the main things that I think you go into so that it can foster your career, so you can continue to grow in your pharmacy career and learn to continue to help patients.
We're talking about American Pharmacist Month, the month of October, the observance of time to recognize contributions to healthcare by pharmacists in all settings from around the country. Patients are encouraged to keep an accurate personal medication record and then share it with providers to prevent medical mistakes. Do you find that the patients you fill prescriptions for have really solid knowledge of what those medications are?
Well, one thing regarding this is that I feel like the patient knows themselves and their medications and what they're taking better than anyone else, and more than the pharmacist or the doctor. They know the specific what they're doing with those medications. Our job is to enhance their knowledge to make sure they understand each medication and what it's for, mm-hmm. and that they go home with that understanding. And it's important for the pharmacist and the doctor and any other nurses, other healthcare staff, to work with the patient as a team to make sure there's a comprehensive knowledge of all of those things. And I think the patient has to have an active role in their medication, how they take their medications, their understanding, and know what they're taking, and be able to come and present that to their pharmacist or their doctor and sit down and work together to make sure everybody's on the same page.
Mm-hmm. In the mail yesterday or the day before, I received a pill splitter from my provider, and I thought it was kind of unusual because you can't get more than 30 days worth of prescription at most locations and in most services, so there'd be no need to split the pill if you can only get a 30-day supply to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a complaint that you hear?
Well, and let me explain that, because what healthcare in general is trying to do is to reduce costs. The more we can reduce costs of medication specifically, the better that is for everybody. And, you know, it's obviously good for an insurance company, but it's also good for healthcare in general. Reduces our costs as pharmacists, reduces medication costs for like Medicaid or Medicare, for example. So what they're encouraging is, let's, instead of doing 30 pills and take one a day, let's do 15 pills, which would be a 30-day supply, and do a half a pill a day. You know, if you get, let's say, a medication for cholesterol, it's a brand-name medication, and you take 20 milligrams a day, and it comes in a 40-milligram tablet, and the cost for, you know, to create or make those pills, the 20-milligram versus the 40-milligram, is virtually the same, very close. Maybe the 40 milligrams just a few
touch more.
But if you're able to take the 40s and do a half tablet, well, that can save considerable cost. And those costs are passed on to the patient as well. So you would have a reduced cost for doing that as well.
So if I wanted to take advantage of this, I would have to talk to my primary care provider who's prescribed these medications and see whether or not half a dose is going to be as effective as the full pill.
And you can also go through your pharmacy or your pharmacist. In fact, right now at three of the UW pharmacies in town, as well as other pharmacies around the state in Wisconsin, we're implementing a new program. And the program is called WPQC, and I won't try to explain what that all means. But the whole idea is something such as you're talking about here, changing from maybe a full tablet to a half tablet, because that's going to reduce costs, save you money. That's something that we can even recognize before you do. I mean, you may not know that that's available with the specific medication that you're taking, mm-hmm. but the pharmacist can recognize that. So we recognize that. We proactively discuss that with you and contact your doctor and get that switch for you so that you save money in that regard. And so what we're doing is this is a program that will be universal for all insurance companies if they decide to sign up for this. And then your insurance companies will reimburse for that. So they pass the cost savings on to you. They reimburse the pharmacist. Mm-hmm. So this is part of what I'm talking about with healthcare reform and starting to the insurance reimbursing for the services that we provide in addition to just the product and starting to reshape the way pharmacists work. And pharmacists have always been doing this for years, but just a matter of let's shift the practice model to reimburse for those things.
Okay. We're talking with Sean Gerke, who's a community pharmacy residency director, senior clinical pharmacist, the pharmacy manager, and a clinical instructor at UW Health Pharmacy Services in the Hilldale Shopping Center in Madison. And we're talking about American Pharmacist Month, a time to recognize the contributions to healthcare by pharmacists in all settings around the country. Talk about some of the significant contributions made by pharmacists to healthcare in the country. And we'll be happy to take your calls, your questions, and your comments at 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. And again, where is the pharmacy at the Hilldale Shopping Center?
Well, if you know where Hilldale's if you head out west on University Avenue, the Hilldale Shopping Center or mall, the UW Health Pharmacy in there is inside the mall.
Inside the mall.
Yep.
Okay.
And where Century Grocery Store is, it's just down the hall on your right-hand
side. All
right. Yep.
Well, we'll talk more of Sean after we check with the latest news. And I'll tell you that I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Jim Packard, in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry wasn't feeling well today, so we made him stay home. Yeah, actually, it's what we did. Otherwise, he'd try to be here if he could. We're talking now with Sean Gerke, who is Community Pharmacy Residency Director, Senior Clinical Pharmacist, the Pharmacy Manager, and a Clinical Instructor at UW Health Pharmacy Services in the Hilldale Shopping Center in Madison. And it's your chance to ask the pharmacist. You can do that at 1-800-642-1234. And Sean, let's go to the phones to Diane, who's on the road somewhere. Hello, Diane.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
The question that I have has to do with birth control pills. I have polycystic ovary syndrome and have been treated with birth control pills and with spironolactone for the hair falling out. And unfortunately, I also suffer from depression, and some of the birth control pills have had a significant impact on the depression, have made the depression worse. Mm-hmm. So what I was wondering is, how do I find the best birth control pill that's going to address the PCOS symptoms and not make my depression worse?
And that's actually a real good question. You know, incidentally, my wife has polycystic ovary syndrome, and so we've had to look at that a little bit, and so I'm somewhat familiar with that. And, you know, I know that for you, I'm not sure how many different ones you've tried, and I'm not going to try and ask you which ones or whatnot, but give me an idea, a little bit more of the background here.
Well, yeah, you know, and the thing is, too, with the depression, I've got multiple medications, but the progesterone-only pill was horrible. I couldn't believe it when I went off it, what a difference it made. But even, like, the microgestin, it did not do, it still made the exacerbated the depression.
Do you know, has your doctor tried specific types of birth control that are supposed to be helpful with polycystic ovary syndrome? Or has that been a conversation you guys have ever had?
I just switched doctors, and she just put me on Yaz.
Okay.
But I'm just so nervous about, I can't get information on this.
Okay.
I don't know how to get information on it.
How long have you been on that one?
3 weeks.
3 weeks, okay. And that's, you know, one in particular that is recommended or can be helpful for your particular condition. There's Yaz and Yasmin, which are almost identical. They just have a very slight difference in how many active pills versus non-active pills there are. I think you're on the right track, and I think that's probably a real good option to start with and go on with from here. Now, you've only been on it for 3 weeks, so I think probably you have to give it a little bit more time to see how that's affecting you, especially with your depression or mood and that kind of thing. And then I imagine that you are being followed up with and trying different medications for that as well.
Oh, actually, for the depression, I've gone all the way to the point of I have a vagus nerve stimulator. Sorry, that's my dog.
Oh, that's okay.
We've got far fewer options left with the antidepressants.
Right, okay. To me, it sounds like what you're doing, spironolactone, the Yaz, and those couple of options for medications is the right move at this time. If you haven't tried those before, those are the things that are popping into my mind as your best avenue at this time.
Okay.
Now, go ahead.
I had one other question, because I have endometriosis,
mm-hmm.
and I've been treated that for the past 20 years, and for where I was 9 weeks on the birth control, 1 week off.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure how that works now with the Yaz, mm-hmm. with having those, you know, extra pills, or if I focus just on treating the PCOS, since that's the one that's bothering me more, if that would be the way to go.
Sure. And for the endometriosis, had you been on some pretty high doses of the birth control, like more than just a one a day pill, or and that's fine. And that's something that I guess you said you've had going on for 20 years and that kind of thing. So that is something that I guess over time, either they decide if they're going to continue to treat it like you are, or if there's, you know, if that's something where some kind of procedure or surgery needs to happen. To me, by the sounds of it, it sounds like your doctors and healthcare professionals that you're working with are going in the right direction. I, you know, without knowing a little bit more about your whole history there, but right now I think things are on the right track for you.
Good luck to you, Diane. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Warren, Illinois, and Don. Hi, Don.
Hi. This should be controversial. Years ago, a dear friend of mine, a pharmacist, small town, told me the way the pharmaceutical industry worked at that time was doctors diagnosed the problem and would converse with the pharmacist to say, what is the best medicine for that today? And that he would prescribe, and the physician or the pharmacist would fill it. I realize that has all changed, because first the doctor has got, you get 4.5 minutes in his office, and then the pharmaceuticals reimbursing doctors and the ads, ask your doctor if you need the purple pill. Open up that can of worms for me.
You bet. I appreciate the question, and it is a very good one. And there are obviously, as we discussed a little bit earlier, if you're listening, talking about healthcare reform and what kind of things can possibly be changed with healthcare in this country, and specifically related to pharmacy. I think your point and your question is a good one, a valid one, and so you're right in some cases, and your friend pharmacist from years ago is right, and that pharmacists and doctors do need to work together, and they need to work together to make the right decisions on medication use for patients. Right now, that is happening. So doctors do look to pharmacists, people who are the experts on the medicines and the medications themselves, and asking them for their opinions. Ultimately, the doctor has the prescribing authority, so the doctor writes the prescription for the medication based on that. And if you go to your local doctor, they'll write you a prescription based on that. But it is the responsibility of the pharmacist to review that prescription, that medication, and decide and make a decision, a professional recommendation that is the right medication for you for that particular indication. And as we talked about earlier, I think that type of model is something that is being visited and needs to be visited for the doctor to be able to look at what conditions there are, discuss it with the pharmacist, get the opinion and the recommendation from the pharmacist for selecting the right medication for patients.
Sounds good.
All right, Don.
All right.
Thanks
very
much.
The question.
We appreciate hearing from you. And that wasn't so controversial, was it?
Not for me.
Amanda, let's go to you in Chippewa Falls.
Hi, I'm a registered nurse. I work for a managed care organization,
mm-hmm.
and I work with generally the frail elder population and adult physical disability population, and I have the pleasure of being able to case manage them and go into their homes and look very closely at how they're using their medication, assess their knowledge of their medications, uses, and how they affect them, and such and things like that.
We applaud you for that. Thank you.
I want to say that I have great working relationships with the pharmacist in my area.
Excellent.
And I know you said, made a statement that most of the time or the patients know their medications the best and they have great knowledge. Well, with the population I serve, I find that not to be true. I have some pretty scary stories of misuse of medication by people just basically for the fact of, you know, lack of education. And I just want to say that I think the pharmacist is an invaluable resource when that patient presents in your pharmacy and you hand them that prescription. Even if you think they don't want to hear your spiel, please give it, because it is invaluable. Because the patients I serve, I feel that they're lucky to have me in that I see them once a month and I go into their house. But, you know, if I see them on October 30th and they got a prescription on October 1st, they've already been using it for 30 days. And if they were missing a critical piece of education, you know, certainly that could be life-threatening.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can give you two examples. One maybe not so life-threatening. The other one definitely is. One lady, I hadn't been in an in-home visit for quite a while, and I showed up at an in-home visit, and I found that she had, she always has a pill planner filled by the pharmacy, so she literally flips the top, takes the pills, you know, she totally trusts the pharmacist. Well, there was one pill, I believe it was magnesium, can't be added to a pill planner because it'll melt or bleed or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they dispensed that in a jar, of course, properly labeled with name, directions, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I found 7 bottles in her home, and I said, what's going on? And she said, well, nobody ever told me that I should take it, or no one ever said why I should take it. So in her world, no one ever specifically said, this is magnesium, this is why you take it, and mm-hmm. yes, you should take it every morning.
And that isn't in her pill box, right? She needs a separate pill box for that one.
Right. So, you know, I did talk to the pharmacist, and we came up with a plan for that one. And another lady had some MS Cotton, which is a long-acting morphine, and it's a coated tablet. And she had a 6D, 60 milligram tablet, and she mm-hmm. took that. and found that it didn't make her feel very well. She felt like it was too strong. So in her world, what she should do is cut the pill in half and take half of a pill. And then, of course, she got very sick.
Right, because
it's a coated tablet. Mm-hmm. And I asked her, and she said, oh, no one ever told me I couldn't cut it in half. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just some instances, I think the pharmacist is so valuable.
Yeah, and I agree, and I appreciate your question, and it allows me to clarify what I meant by, you know, the patient knows. And I think one thing that happens and one thing that causes problems sometimes for patients is that it is really important that your pharmacist, the one that you go to and communicate with, knows all of your medications, including the over-the-counter, maybe a herbal or a supplement type thing, because the patient knows, and I understand in your case, I agree 100% that those patients really depend on you, for example, and their pharmacist to know all that wide variety of medications that they take. But also, patients know other things that they take and the whole wide variety of how they're actually really doing it and taking their medications. And that communication is, I'll use your term, invaluable, to be able to communicate with their pharmacist, with their doctor, with their nurse like yourself, and make sure they understand exactly how all those things are going so we can catch those problems and fix them.
Amanda, thank you so much for sharing with us. We're going late in the program, and I want to get some more people in, and that's Peter in Stoughton is next.
Good afternoon. I have two questions related to non-prescription medications.
Mm-hmm.
My family is about 2 weeks out of dealing with the flu,
mm-hmm.
and two things came to mind. I see the instructions on, for instance, ibuprofen, where they talk persons 12 years and older, you have a certain dose.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when my daughter was 12 years old, she weighed approximately half of what I weigh, and I'm wondering where the criteria for 12 years of age comes across in non-prescription medications.
Right.
And another question is the interaction of drugs for people who are dealing with flu. Once again, I'm talking non-prescription.
Mm-hmm.
Should we be avoiding taking this if we're taking that, or I guess in general, what mm-hmm. sort of interactions should people be avoiding when they're dealing with something that unfortunately may be common?
Yeah. Well, thank you. And that's actually an excellent question and something that I discuss with my patients all the time. Your first question regarding the dosing of the ibuprofen for, it was your daughter, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And knowing, okay, they have this 12-year-old limit here. Okay, if she's over 12, then everything's fine. If she's under 12, then it's kind of ambiguous here. It's got a different dose or a half dose. Yes, you're correct in the way that 12 is kind of a ballpark. It's saying, okay, this is a measure of, you know, at this particular time, that's about when they're okay with receiving an adult dose based on averages and so on and so forth. There's also dosing based on weight that's calculated. If your daughter or anybody's daughter out there is a particular size that may be a little over or a little under what might be the normal, then that's something that easily I as a pharmacist or your pharmacist could look up for you and calculate to make sure that your daughter is within the right range and getting the correct amount of medication. And that's something we do all the time. Your second question is an excellent question, and yes, it's very true that if you're taking any over-the-counter medication for any reason, just kind of a rule of thumb or for safety reasons, just go and ask your pharmacist that you get your medications from and say, hey, you know, I got the flu or I'm not feeling well, I've got some kind of virus, and I was thinking about taking this, you know, I was thinking about taking ibuprofen or Sudafed or something like that, you know. Can you double-check, make sure this isn't a problem with my other medications? Most of the time, you know, everything will probably be fine, and it may be even just a monitoring thing. Well, that's okay to take with your other medications, just if you have any side effects such as this or feelings such as this, Maybe come back and let me know, get that double checked. We may need to check your blood pressure and whatnot. Also, certain things like ibuprofen, for example, it's your body gets rid of it through your kidneys. So people that have kidney disease or kidney problems, they need to have that dose differently, or possibly that's just a medication where they need to look for an alternative medication. So there are definitely factors involved there, and that's a perfect question for your pharmacist to review with your other medications.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Peter. Good luck to you, and let's try Nick in Green Bay. Hi, Nick.
Hi. I just got a quick question about some medicine I'm on. I don't have a health insurance, so I didn't see a doctor for this, but we just happened to have it in the cabinet, so I started taking it. I found out I was diabetic probably about a week ago.
Okay.
And we happened to have metformin in the cupboard.
Okay.
I knew it was for diabetes, so I started taking one of those a day at 500 milligrams, and I feel so much better. I don't use the bathroom as much or anything. What are some of the side effects, though? Because, like I said, this wasn't really prescribed to me, but I don't have health insurance, so...
Well, of course, I'm going to preach to you a little bit, and the problem is that medications such as that, they do require monitoring. So it's not just like, okay, this is a diabetes pill, I'm going to take this and it's going to fix my problem. But it's that if you're not being watched for certain things like your kidney function or your liver function and things like that, sometimes those medications can affect that. And then your doctor checks those things to make sure it's not affecting you. So I'm not saying that that's happening right now, but I would suggest... I mean, I understand your health insurance situation, and that's something you probably need to look at. But if you have a doctor that you had been going to, if you're able to get maybe their nurse on the phone and discuss it with them, they might be able to help you out with some of that. Metformin, it does have some side effects, such as a lot of people, one of the minimal side effects anyway, people get some stomach upset with it. And over time, sometimes that can get better. If it's lasting over a long period of time, sometimes they'll switch to something else or change a dose or something like that. Other thing is you really can't have any alcohol with it. And the reason is like I had discussed earlier, it has some effects on your liver, and it can compound those effects. And then it can really affect, it can secrete lactic acid into your system and cause a lot of problems there, cause certain conditions that can be life-threatening. It's the number one first-line medication for type 2 diabetes, and it works very, very well and has, it's prescribed for, you know, thousands, millions of people and works real well. But I would recommend at least discussing it with whoever your healthcare provider might be or was, and just to let them know what's going on so that they can give you some recommendations based on that.
Okay.
All right, Nick, thanks very much for your call. Let's try Aaron in Grafton. Hello, Aaron.
Hi. I'm calling about my 83-year-old mother. Excuse me. I think her doctor is very good as far as all his checks, her mm-hmm. levels of things, but she's on multiple medications.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. She's on multiple medications, and I'm concerned that just the fact of having multiple medications causes problems, especially at 83. My mother's very, you know, she does watch everything. She's, she's very proactive as far as checking when things might be a little off and when not, but I'm just wondering if she's over-medicated. There's mm-hmm. some things that are just going to be at 83.
Well, and this is at the heart of issues of how possibly we could have a pharmacist that could help you, and even just to look at that, multiple medications, and the term for that is polypharmacy. So, and especially in older people that have just a wide variety of different medications they're on. Obviously, the more you have, the more chances there are for potential interactions or problems, or maybe even, you know, I got 8 pills that I have to take every day. I don't want to take that many. That's too many for me to take. I'm just not going to take this one or that one or what have you. And that happens. And, you know, Like, how would you feel to have maybe even you and your mother to come in and to sit down with a pharmacist and have them just do, you know, half hour focused visit just on her medications to review them and double check with another set of eyes as to whether or not that all seems appropriate.
Sean, thank you so much, and I'm sorry we can't get to more calls, but we've run out of time. Our guest has been Sean Gerke, who's the Community Pharmacy Residency Director, Senior Clinical Pharmacist, Pharmacy Manager, and Clinical Instructor, UW Health Pharmacy Services in the Hilldale Shopping Center in Madison. Sean, again, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. It's glad to be here.
If you'd like a CD of the program, it's available through the radio store, 1-800-747-7444, and ask for program 1022G, as in G-Wiz. Tomorrow, we'll be talking with Marge Schneider of the Madison Herb Society about growing and using herbs. That's Garden Talk at 11 tomorrow here on the Ideas Net.